Bom dia, boa tarde. Welcome to another episode of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. I'm your guest host, John Neves, back here again to talk about my favorite subject, your favorite subject, and that is, of course, Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, whatever word you use in your part of the world. Episode 202. Last year at this time, and I'm talking about the days leading up to Christmas, in Portugal, the World Cup, as you know, of course, finished for Portugal early, and the players were back in Portugal or their club teams in other parts of Europe, and we were getting ready this weekend to resume a Liga football. That's where we were a year ago at this time. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 202. A lot for me to talk about here. First off, mixed weekend of action. We have a few matches in the first and second division. And then, of course, we have the final match days of the Taça da Liga, the League Cup. I'll talk about that in a minute. Very controversial Clásico on Monday in Alvalade between Sporting and Porto. And did you hear about the controversy with the elevator? I'll explain it to you for a minute. Also going to spend some time talking about Boa Vista because the reality, the financial reality that Boa Vista is going through is, I think, something that a lot of clubs in Portugal go through. It's not all beautiful like the Big Three or Big Four, and I'll talk about that in a minute. European Super League is back in the news, and I'll give you a few thoughts about that. I'm not really surprised by the turn of events. And Benfica and Porto, in 2 years, are heading to play in the United States, and I'll give you the details. But why it's actually not very good for the Liga schedule. And then, of course, I'll have my Big Four report, the Liga report, Player Abroad report. And then I'll finish up talking about my favorite subject all the time on this episode, and that is, of course, talking about my club in the fifth tier in Portugal. And I'm happy to report things continue to go very, very well. First off, let me just say this weekend, because of obviously, of course, Christmas, major holiday in Portugal like anywhere else, we've got basically matches being played Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in the Taça da Liga and in the Liga. And just starting off with the Liga, only two matches on Saturday to get going. Match day 15 of the Liga Betclic. Vitória Guimarães is at home to Rio Ave. And Vizela, who has a new manager that I'll talk about in a minute, they are going to be playing Moreirense. Moreirense has only lost one match in their last 10 matches. They sit in sixth place battling for a European spot. It has been an incredible season for Moreirense so far. And those are really the only two matches taking place this weekend before Christmas. Everything else will resume next week. Basically, everything will get going on Thursday with the Estrela Amadora Arouca. And then on Friday of next week, Benfica and Porto play. Benfica playing Famalicão and Porto playing Chaves. And that, again, that is all for next week. But this week, really a lot of the focus is going to be on the League Cup, the Taça da Liga, match day 3, the final match day. We saw Benfica on Thursday beat Arouca, AVS. 4-1 in the Luge. Benfica wins Group B with 6 points. Arouca with 3 and AVS from the second division with 0. And as a result, Benfica advances again to the Taça da Liga, the League Cup Final Four. We already know that Estoril Praia already won Group D. So Benfica and Estoril Praia, as we talk right now, are the two groups that qualified. The other two will be decided. First, the day I dropped this episode on Friday, Braga is going to be making the trip to Madeira, and they will be playing Nacional. Nacional's already been eliminated, but Braga, very important match for them because you got Casa Pia in first with 4 points, Braga with only one. And Braga, basically, it's very simple for them, the math. They win by 2 goals. They win Group A, and they advance again to the Taça da Liga Final Four. If they do not win by 2 goals, but let's say they win 3-2, 4-3, 5-4, a one-goal win, as long as they score at least 3 goals, they also would win the group, simply because Casa Pia total goals is 3. And if Braga does not win by 2 goals, their next best opportunity to win the group would be to score at least 3 goals and win. And if they do that, they will move ahead and qualify. And then if there's a big tie, one of the interesting things about this competition is they will go to, between the two teams that are tied, the team that fielded the youngest group of players by average age, that will be the team that will advance. but I don't think it's going to get there. I think Braga, we'll see if they're able to go there and win against the Nacional team that's battling for promotion in the second division. It won't be easy. And then on Saturday, we have two groups that will finish. Sporting will be making the trip up north to Tundela. All Sporting needs to do is beat Tundela. It's going to be sold out, that matchup there in Tundela. And all Sporting needs to do is, at minimum, get a draw, and they will advance to the dust of the Liga League Cup Final Four. Tundela needs to win by two goals. And if they do, then they would win this group. And then the other match on Saturday night, and again, this is in Group D. That's already been decided with Estoril Praia, but Porto in the Dragon will be playing Leixões, a battle of two local teams, really playing for nothing. But nevertheless, it is a Saturday night. It's a holiday weekend. And Porto is making these tickets for these matches very, very cheap. And that will attract games, especially for people who've never seen a game in the Dragon, or people who maybe want to go see a game in the Dragon and don't have to worry about spending 30, 40, 50, 60 euros. This would be the match. And again, that'll be played as well. So the Nacional Braga match on Friday is 2:15 in Madeira. And then on Saturday, Tundela Sporting at 1800 hours. And then it wraps up Porto against Leixões in the Dragon at 2:30. So that's your football. And then, of course, no football on Sunday, Christmas Eve, a major holiday in Portugal, as is, of course, Christmas on Monday. Let me take this opportunity. Wherever you are in your part of the world, happy holidays. And however you do it, I hope you enjoy this weekend, or at the very least, enjoy and take an opportunity to relax and take it easy with however you celebrate it or not. But continuing to move on here, I want to talk about a topic that was a bit of a concern in Portugal this week. And that is, and I guess I'll start off here because, you know, we're going to be talking here in a few minutes about the European Super League and how much money is involved. But when we talk about money in Portugal, Porto, Sporting, and Benfica, and to a certain extent Braga, make good money by playing in Europe. But a lot of clubs in Portugal struggle. And Boavista right now is going through a very tough period. First off, three bad things happened this past week. Off on the pitch, them and manager Petit have parted ways. Jorge Cotto, who's one of the assistants on the team, if I read correctly, is now overseeing the team. And basically, Boavista, which started the season, remember, they started off the season match day one beating Benfica at home. They won four of their first five matches. That other fifth match was a draw. And you thought that Boavista could finally be a club considered to be the sixth biggest in Portugal to do something. But since then, they've lost something like five in a row and have struggled, and as a result, a change was made with the manager. But not just that, the club has had some issues financially. A few months ago, some of the players refused to train and the staff refused to work because they hadn't been paid. I remember 00 Petit putting out a video showing the players outside the stadium waiting. What happened is, again, the players, 2 days this week, based on what was written in the news, decided to not train because their players haven't been paid. Some reports say three, other reports say two. The staff hasn't been paid. Some say 3 months, others say 4 months. And as a result, this is a very difficult situation. And think about yourselves. Think about you and your lives, you know, the job you work. And imagine going to work every day and you haven't been paid in a few months. Well, that's what a lot of the staff and the players are going through. And this is not a situation that you would expect, at least of a first division club. There are a lot of clubs in Portugal that have financial problems because tickets are not very expensive, and they can't make them expensive, otherwise many people wouldn't go. The clubs make money on sponsorship, but those deals aren't necessarily incredibly lucrative. This is why selling players in Portugal becomes a big thing, or attaching 10 to 15% of your name on a player's economic rights so you make money in the future if they're sold, because whatever TV money you get, and if you're in the first or second division, you get something, but it's certainly not EPL money. It's certainly not French money or Italian money or German money. But the point is a first division club in Portugal, the stadium doesn't even have water. It's been cut off. The gas has been cut off. There was a report that I read about in one of the newspapers, a bowl, that said the players had to go home and take showers. So this is a grave situation. Clubs in Portugal are not allowed. They have to basically be owned through investing, through the SAD. It's not like in England or the United States where a billionaire will come in. He's got a lot of money to spend. He's a sports fan. So what does he do? He buys a professional sports team. That does not happen in Portugal. A lot of times they are done to protect the clubs in Portugal, although in this case one would wonder how is it exactly protecting Boavista. But the point is Boavista needs money. Pedro Maieiro has been linked with Benfica. One report said Benfica was offering 4. Boavista wants 5. Probably they'll meet halfway next month when the transfer window opens, especially the money, which is much needed for Boavista. But it's hard to believe that you got players that don't want to train because they're not paid. It's hard to believe that the water's been cut off to the stadium. You would not think that this is a first division club in Portugal. And I'm not going to sit here and criticize the players, because I think a lot of us, if we hadn't been paid in a few months, would try to take some type of action, especially the employees. I mean, they've got families. They got car bills, rent or house bills, whatever it may be. So, and the thing also that I think is to understand in Portugal is a lot of players, if they're not playing for one of the bigger clubs, maybe they're making, they're not making 6 figures, over 100,000 or anything like that. A lot of managers don't make that much money. The prestige is that you're playing in the first division and you're using that as a trampoline to try to boost yourself to play for a bigger club. That is generally the attraction. But financially, it's tough for clubs. And it is tough. Clubs don't get the TV money that the big three or Braga get. Clubs don't have, especially in the case of Boavista, they're not getting 10, 15,000 fans a game, which at $20 or 10 euros per person would bring in a lot of cash. They are getting some money from the TV, but it is certainly not very strong. So it's a tough situation for Boavista. And I think sometimes when we sit here and we get excited about the young players and we get excited about watching our big clubs, we have to realize that there's a different reality with a lot of the other clubs. And it seems like every year, 2 or 3 clubs in Portugal really have issues. And it's just very, very unfortunate that this has happened. So a bit of a hug goes out to all the fans at Boavista for some tough times. Usually you don't hear about these economic problems until the spring. The Liga, the salary group that tries to make sure that clubs are on top of paying salaries, listed Boavista, Leixões, and Villaverdense, two of these three clubs are in the second division, as being behind at least something like 2 months on salary, and Boavista has been a call with this. In addition to the fact that apparently per reports in the Ojogo, players decided not to train because they haven't been paid yet. So this is the reality in Portugal. This is the reality of a lot of clubs. I think there was a player during the summer, was it Reggie Cannon, that was complaining that he hadn't been played? I don't know how it works. You know, you always wonder if Portuguese clubs were allowed to be bought. I mean, unfortunately, if they were, a lot of big billionaires, especially from the Middle East, would buy the clubs, and the clubs probably would have more money to spend on players and things of that nature. But people worry about losing the Portuguese identity, or basically some people feel like they want the focus to be on the young players being given a chance to play and develop, because that's where a lot of the money in Portugal comes from. But if you allowed major money into Portugal, rich people to buy clubs, would Portugal be in better shape? And that'll be something that I will talk about in the future. So some sad news about Boavista. Hug out to them, and hopefully everybody's going to be doing okay. The big Clásico, of course, as we know, and by the way, is it a Clásico? I had somebody in my mailbag that says it's not. But Monday we had the big match between Sporting for the first time since 2016/17, beat Porto in a Liga match. I think Porto had gone a lot of matches across all competitions, not having beaten Porto yet, but this time they did 2-0. And here's an interesting story that I read. I mean, you know what happened on the pitch, the goals that were called off. A lot of Sporting fans were very upset. We saw what happened with Pep. A lot of Porto fans are upset about that. But an interesting story happened that a lot of people don't know. And again, it's this type of stuff that to me is just unfortunate. But apparently the audiovisual crew with Sporting and every club in Portugal, or every club in Europe in that matter, this has nothing to do with Portugal. And I've seen it firsthand with my own eyes. I've assisted in it in the past in my other jobs. basically they want to be in the stadium of the match, upper level, to record the game, and they're not using the TV feed. A lot of times they're following a player. A lot of times they're trying to figure out what the other teams are doing, a tactic, and then at halftime they evaluate the video, and then the information goes down to the clubhouse and it's relayed to the coaches that this has changed or that has changed or this player is playing a little bit less back, things of that nature. So what happened was, apparently the elevator that this audiovisual group was going to use to get down to the clubhouse on the bottom floor wasn't working. And that's how Sporting defended it. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say Sporting was wrong, and I'm not going to sit here, that Porto couldn't get down to the bottom. Excuse me if I said it wrong. But Sporting says that the elevator was out simply because of the amount of people that were in the stadium. And that was the reason why the elevator wasn't working for Porto to get down to the clubhouse. And Porto complained. They apparently were delayed by about 10 minutes getting down there, which meant they probably had to find another way and rush. But what's interesting is I was talking to somebody about this, and they said, well, you know, it's interesting. Sporting plays big matches, including in the Champions League, and you never hear about the clubs complaining that they can't get to the first level. So I thought that was an interesting point that I had heard. But the bottom line is, the word that I saw on my Twitter, X, whatever you call it, timeline, is a lot of people feel there's a lot of corruption in Portugal. There's a lot of games being played. And this certainly was one of them, in terms of a situation where some professionalism that Porto expected was not received back. So I'm curious to see the next time when Sporting goes to Dragão, whether or not Porto will retaliate, because clubs are notorious for doing that. But I thought that was a pretty, pretty interesting story that came out this week, in addition to the many stories. Pep, by the way, because he was sent off that match, he has been suspended for the next two Porto matches, so he will not be back until 2024 for Futebol Clube do Porto. Speaking of Porto and Benfica, they're going to be playing in the inaugural FIFA World Club Cup, and it's going to be played in the United States in 2025. It starts, I think, middle of June, runs until the middle of July. So the good news is, if you are in the United States, two of the bigger clubs in Portugal are coming. I think the last time Sporting was in America was, actually both Benfica and Sporting, in terms of, I'm going with Portuguese clubs here, not Porto. Sporting was back in 2019 when they played Liverpool at Yankee Stadium. Bruno Fernandes was still on the team. That same night, across the river in New Jersey at Red Bull Arena, where the New York Red Bulls play in Major League Soccer, that night Benfica was playing Fiorentina. And so that was the summer of 2019. So that's the last time that Benfica was in the United States. Porto, I don't think, has been back in the United States. I'm trying to remember. It's been maybe 10 years, maybe longer. I can't remember if they came here with Paulo Fonseca. But the point is they will be coming here. But here's the angle that I wanted to share with you that I think is so. I'm glad to see two Portuguese clubs out of 32 will be involved in this new club competition, which, you know, obviously for FIFA is more money. But if Porto and Benfica are playing this competition from the middle of June until the middle of January, that means that that squad that they just used for that season is going to continue in this competition. You know, you figure they'll probably have maybe 2 to 3 weeks to get ready. And then they're going to still be playing, which means, depending on when they finish in this competition, whether they finish in the knockout round, whether they finish in the groups, or if they're fortunate to go to the final four and final. The point is I'm very curious to see what the Liga schedule is going to be, because if two of your three big clubs in Portugal are playing real matches to the middle of July, players need at least a month off. I believe that's what they're entitled to. So does that mean the Liga is going to start the same time that it is, because two Portuguese clubs, big ones, are going to be playing in another competition? You can't necessarily start the Liga without them. I mean, what are these clubs going to do? Not play the first four match days and just play them later on in the season with a congested schedule that includes already 10 matches in the brand new Champions League, if they're playing in it or something like that? Or is it 8 new matches? So that's the only downside to this, is I wonder what this means for the Liga schedule, the Super Cup. A lot of people I know that the first week of August is the Portuguese Super Cup. That's going to change. That means you're pushing off the schedule a little bit later in August. That will make people that go to Portugal very happy on vacation. So the good news is you have confirmed in June of 2025, Porto and Benfica are coming to the United States. The bad news is what does this mean for the Liga schedule? Will they start later? The players need at least 3 to 4 weeks vacation. That's generally what they get. You can't just, you know, this isn't COVID ending one season that needed to finish and then starting the other one a few weeks later. That's not necessarily what's going to happen here, but I think that that is something worth mentioning it. Let me move on here to Liga news. Vizel has a new manager. His name is Ruben de la Barrera. He used to be the manager of El Salvador national team in CONCACAF. But here's what's weird. He started managing them this past September. And 3 months later, he told El Salvador that he was leaving because he had a first division opportunity in Portugal. And that turned out to be, of course, Vizela. So, you know, look, Vizela, as we know, are near the bottom. A lot of work to do for Vizela. A lot of work. They are certainly not the team that they were last year. But basically, Vizela going the foreign route with the manager. And this manager only managed El Salvador for 3 months. He's from Spain, this manager. And now he's decided for a first-team opportunity. Cannot be happy if you're El Salvador to leave this quickly. Or maybe he just saw some things he didn't like. But at the end of the day, Vizela has a new manager. And the other interesting thing about Vizela is their superstar player, Samuel Essendi, has scored 17 of their 14 goals this season in Liga. So he's been doing very, very well. I told you about salary control, the Liga calling out three teams and giving them 15 days to get their salary paid up. So pay attention to this if you're Boavista fans. Boavista Leixões and Villaverdense did not comply with the salary control. And they have been given 15 days to fix this problem and get salaries up to date. I told you about Moreirense. They have been an incredible story. In the last 10 matches, 6 wins, 3 draws, 1 loss. You remember last year, Moreirense dominated the second division, you know, after the previous year being relegated to the second division. But they have been a very, very strong club. So congratulations to Moreirense. Moving on to other stuff. FIFA final rankings came out. Portugal finished in 7th place, pretty much based on the most recent report. Again, nobody takes these seriously, but FIFA does, and it is a part of the coefficient. It is a part of the seeding. And hey, I'm happy that Portugal is in the top 10 because with all the talent we have, we are no doubt one of the top 10 best countries in the world. So I have no issue with that. Other news regarding the Seleção, the Portugal-Sweden match in Guimarães on March the 21st is sold out. Not a surprise, Guimarães, one of the capitals of Portugal, is a hotbed for football, soccer. And I've always told you, if Vitória Guimarães could ever make a run in Europe or make a run in Portugal, finish top 3, that fan base will show up to as much as 30 to 40,000 a match. But this match has been sold out, so no surprise there. What is interesting, however, is that the national team, the Seleção, is going to be playing a second match during that international break. But as I'm dropping this episode, we still don't know what that is. Moving on to the European draws. Obviously, we've got 4 teams still alive in Portugal. The toughest one, no doubt, but then again, they are playing in the toughest competition, the Champions League. We saw Porto get Arsenal, the Gunners, the team that I follow in the Premier League. Of course, Arsenal has really played well last year and this year as a whole compared to the previous years before that. And Porto draws Arsenal, so not a very easy draw. But whereas the other 3 clubs in the Europa League, they're doing okay. Braga is playing a team called Karabag. Will be a tricky first tie playing this match. I believe the first leg is going to be played at Karabag, which I believe is from all the way out. I think it's like a 6 or 7 hour flight. But this is a good opportunity for Braga to advance. Sporting's going to be playing Young Boys of Switzerland. They have a good history, Young Boys. But I think Sporting, especially with all their young players and their Swedish striker, this should be an opportunity for Sporting to try to advance to the round of 16. And Benfica will be playing Toulouse of France. Again, a very good draw for the 3 teams in the Europa League. And I think if you're Portuguese, a fan, you have to be happy with these draws. Moving on here, talking about my international and managers abroad report. First off, congratulations to Nuno Espírito Santo. He has been named the new manager returning to the Premier League with Nottingham Forest. He's got a lot of work to do. I think I saw that something like they were in 17th place out of 20. But again, that's when you get new job opportunities is when the team is not doing well and they're looking for a new manager. And that's what happened with Nuno. Of course, you know, most recently he was in Saudi Arabia. Before that, if I recall, he was with Wolves for a while. And he's had some great moments in his career, some very, very good moments in his career. And he's going to try to do everything he can to get Nottingham Forest at least to the mid-table and try to get them as positive as possible in the Liga. Renato Sanches, though, the news does not continue to be very good. He, Jose Mourinho, subbed him into a game, and then something like 15 minutes later, pulled him out. Mourinho felt bad, apologized, but at the end of the day, decisions have to be made to with regards to what's going on in the match. And it continues to be a mystery. Someday someone's going to make a documentary of how a young player like this, you know, starts playing for Benfica, with that Rui Vitória side, scores that incredible goal, I remember, against Rio Ave when Pedro Martins was the manager of Rio Ave, plays a big factor. I remember the matches that he played. I think it was against Zenit St. Petersburg when Andres Villas-Boas was a manager. He was an absolute major midfielder in that match. He was an absolute monster, and I say that in the most complimentary way. Incredible. And then, of course, he made the move to Bayern, and that did not work out. And he started, got his footing playing at Lille in France. And now, of course, he's on loan to Roma. Jose Mourinho trying to turn him around. But things aren't working for him as well in Roma. He's been injured. And an incredible talent when things are going right for him. And now he seems to be going in the other direction. And there's a lot of people that are concerned. But he had a very tough situation being substituted so fast. So, again, things have not been going very, very well for him, at least lately, down in Italy. Carlos Carvajal, I had mentioned to you, he had been the new manager of Olympiacos. He's off to a win and a draw with in Greece as manager. So he's off to a very, very good start. Women's football in Portugal, they are currently on break. You know, of course, women's football in Portugal only has 12 teams. They just had a bit of a long break for the international, but they won't be starting up action until January the 6th. Benfica's women did finish in a 1-1 draw against Frankfurt, I believe, in the Women's Champions League. A very good result for the women. And Benfica women continue to lead women's football in Portugal with 24 points, 2 points ahead of Sporting. Braga's in third place with 19 points. And again, women's football is on break until January the 6th. One thing going back, Cristiano Ronaldo is about to finish. So I'm going back to the International Player Report. But Cristiano is about to finish 6 months in Saudi Arabia. You know, when the reports first came out, everyone talked about the money. Everybody talked about, you know, the fact that they thought he was going to a weaker league. But the opportunities weren't great in Europe. And I think when you look back at this, seeing how much incredible talent has been bought and brought to Saudi Arabia, seeing how happy he seems to be, he's certainly done well with the Seleção, the two or three times that he's been called back. I would say that we would have to say so far that the decision for him to go to Saudi Arabia has been a very, very good one, that things are starting to work out for him. He has that smile back. He has the smile back, and he's in a part of the world that worships him as a footballer. And I think as we head into 2024, knowing where he was during the summer, everything that happened with United, it's nice to see, I think, Cristiano back. And whether or not he's more successful because the league is weaker, although let's be honest with you, there's a lot of good players there. The bottom line, the kid's doing well. And a Cristiano that's doing well is good news for the Seleção at the Euro this summer. So let's not really forget about that. I think that's very important. A quick report about the Big Four. Obviously, we're starting to see a lot of these Sporting players. Gonçalo Inácio has been linked with Real Madrid over Alaba's injury. Goyökeres, I know I didn't say that right, but the Swedish striker, apparently if he's going to leave in January, the price is his release clause of 100 million, but Fabrizio Romano said he did not see him leave. But Sporting's happy. They're in first place. They're involved in all their competitions. And I think if you're Sporting, things are going very, very well after last year's disappointment. And of course, Sporting, the most important thing that they're happy about is that they are in first place and they got a good draw. Benfica, of course, as we just told you, they're alive in four competitions. Although, are they really alive in four competitions since they were eliminated from the Champions League and now they go to Europa? Maybe we say they're alive in three and a half competitions. But nevertheless, Benfica, Roger Schmidt is a little bit more calmer at press conferences. Big question is will Benfica make any big moves? Rui Costa has said that, yes, they are going to go and get some players in this January window because the thinking is that some of the players that they've brought in past transfer windows haven't necessarily panned out. They do have players like Bach coming back from injury. So we'll see what happens. And it was good to see Di Maria score a goal. And he continues to bring that experience. And we'll see if Benfica can make a run in the Europa League. Certainly playing the team that they've drawn is a very good sign so far because they're not playing pretty much a giant. Porto, a lot of news with Porto this week. Jogo on the cover. And, of course, we all know Jogo is kind of considered Porto's paper. But Porto, something like, 5 or 6 Clásicos, has finished the match with man down, 10 players. And obviously the most recent situation happened on Monday with Pep. And again, however you see it, he was sent off. But a lot of Porto fans are very frustrated. A lot of Sporting fans believe he deserved to be thrown out. But Porto, not going through a very great time. I mean, look, they're only, people shouldn't really panic yet, really, with any of the Portuguese clubs. I mean, Sporting 34 points, Benfica 33, Porto with 31 points, and we're approaching Christmas, so 3 points separate first and third, and Braga is only 5 points behind from first place with 29 points. But Porto has 3 Liga losses already, which equals the amount of losses they had last year in Liga, and that's the really big thing. Looks like Gabriel Veron, if I recall correctly, I think he came back from vacation injured, and that never endeared him to the club, but looks like he might be going on loan to Palmeiras with Abel Ferreira, and maybe he can go there and recapture that momentum of his career that he's lost going to Porto. Porto spent over $10 million getting him, so he's going to be going back to Brazil on loan. And Jorge Jesus, one of my favorite managers, may not be yours, but he's one of my favorite managers, came out and complimented Porto, saying that while a lot of the other clubs have gone out and spent money abroad, Porto getting players from Estoril, Chaves, Moreirense, whatever it may be, Portimonense. JJ has been very complimentary about Porto, that Porto were going to get talent at some of these smaller clubs in Portugal, and the fact that they've been able to maintain the success. Remember, they're still alive in the Champions League. He was very complimentary. And they did also ask JJ about returning to Portugal, and he said, hey, I'm one of the highest paid managers in the world. Why would I want to leave where I am now? And when you're making as much money as he has in Saudi Arabia, let me tell you, I wouldn't leave either. It just doesn't make any sense. And he's also managing one of the biggest clubs in Saudi Arabia. I've already told you about the talent level there, so I think it works out very, very well that he continues to stay there and make the money that he's making. Before I talk about my favorite club in Portugal, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this, whether it's for 10 minutes, whether it's for 40, 45 minutes, whatever it is, every week. Thank you. And again, if you're listening for the first time, welcome. I've been doing PortugueseSoccer.com for over 25 years. I've seen this league and the players through different generations. I remember Cristiano Ronaldo's debut for Sporting. I remember the Golden Generation. I've been there. I have seen it all. And I come on here every week to give a review and a preview and my thoughts. And a lot of people don't agree with this. My thoughts objectively as to what I think is going on in Portugal and what needs to change. But please give it a follow if you haven't already at Spotify, Google Podcast, iTunes, PortugueseSoccer.com. If you can't find it, let me know. I will find it for you. Podcast Addict is another one. And of course, I also put the audio on YouTube for those that maybe want to listen to the audio on YouTube. So again, thank you so much. And if you want to send, I'm going to be doing mailbag coming up here in a few minutes. Again, the email, psoccer.com, all one word, @gmail.com. And if you want to criticize me, if you want to compliment me, if you want to read out some comments on the mailbag coming up, or you want to ask me a question, that's exactly where you go. I had someone ask me recently about what's the best way, if you don't speak Portuguese, to follow Portugal. Google, especially Chrome or Firefox, has a tremendous translator. You'd be shocked at how good that translator is, if that would enable you to, on a day-to-day basis, read more Portuguese articles that way. So I wanted to pass that along. But let me talk about my favorite club in Portugal, and that is, of course, my parents' hometown team up north, Athletico dos Arcos, which play in the fifth tier. As anybody knows, my dream is to see them work their way up the pyramid here in Portugal. But we've lost in the playoffs twice. And even though a few years ago we were in the third division, back when there were only four divisions, under this new restructuring, we are back, fell down to the fifth, and we've been trying to work our way up ever since. But the good news is that my club, Athletico dos Arcos from Arcos do Valvejo, the greatest small town in Portugal, is in first place in the Viana do Castelo region with 34 points, 5 points ahead of Munson. And last week, we recorded a big win against our rivals across the river, that fake team, Ponta Barca. We beat them 1-0 at their place. And as a result, right now, we have a 9-point advantage on Ponta Barca. This weekend, all the matches are going to be played on Saturday. Obviously, nobody plays on Christmas Eve in Portugal, of course. But we are going to be playing a team in the 12th place called Deu Cristo SC. They've only accumulated 13 points in 13 matches compared to Athletico dos Arcos, my club, which has accumulated 34 in 13 matches. My club has a plus 23 goal differential. This club has a minus 3 goal differential. And they're going to our stadium, the Estádio do Cutada. And that is going to be a result. We're going to want the 3 points. Musson will also be at home. They are going to be playing ninth place, SC Corinthians. So the goal right now is not only to win, but to also see Munson drop points. And right now, again, we have a 5-point lead. And I'm not going to get too excited, because last January of last season, we had a 5-point lead in January. And then it all came apart. We lost our manager. And it all went downhill. Some people are worried in that some of the best players may be moving on to bigger clubs. And that does happen, by the way, down at that level, players moving up to the third and fourth division. Hopefully that doesn't affect our club too much, which is why it's important to go into the new year, if it's possible, with an 8-point lead and try to build on the 5 points that we have right now. But so happy for my hometown club, Athletico dos Arcos, as they sit in first place in their group with a 5-point lead. Let me finish up here with the mailbag. And of course, just a gentle reminder, if you ever want to email me comments, you want to ask a question, you want to criticize me, very simple, psoccer.com, that's short for psoccer.com, psoccer.com at Gmail. Of course, you could also find the email on portuguesesoccer.com. But I've got three great mailbag items that are coming up this week. First off, I'm going to start off with Jack Hacken, Bald Pep. And he writes to me, I have another question, comment for the mailbag. Is Diego Gonçalves at FC Copenhagen quietly having perhaps the most underrated season of any Portuguese player abroad, since his team is now in the round of 16 of the Champions League and still very close to the top spot in the Danish league, and him leaving having 7 goals and 3 assists in 19 matches so far? I simply thought that he deserved a mention, and thank you for answering my question in advance. First off, you are absolutely correct. I should have mentioned him in my player abroad section. He's a Benfica product, played on their B team. Then he went on loan to Nottingham Forest. Then he also went on loan to Famalicão. Came back to Benfica in August 2020, signed a deal until 2025. But then he made a permanent move to Copenhagen in Denmark. And yeah, he's an example of a player. Didn't have a lot of opportunity at Benfica. Okay. Gets loaned out. Probably Benfica told him where to go. Doesn't work out for him. And now he eventually does leave Benfica. He has a chance to go play for a club that he knows is going to be playing in Europe, and he's taken advantage of it. And he has definitely been one of the better players. I mean, there's a lot of other great players, but I would say right now, in terms of not many people knew about him other than the fact that he was at Benfica, to the point now where he is literally a starter on a Champions League team, and they're on the 16. Yes, it is absolutely a great story, and he deserves more attention. And he's very underrated. I think he deserves more attention, and he's starting to come into his own, and it's really working out well for him. And I'm not very happy. Is he going to get called up to the national team one day? Probably not. But you know what? Who knows? Maybe if Copenhagen make a shocking run, and that's what it would be called, shocking, maybe it would be an amazing thing if it were to happen. So we shall see. Next comment comes from one of my favorites, and that's Bag Full of Tofi. He talks about the European draws. Look forward to hearing your thoughts on the European draws. My thoughts are Porto got a hard draw against your English team. Arsenal really need to take a lead at home in the first to have a good chance in the second leg. Totally agree with you. Europa playoff draw could not have gone any better. Young boys I would put on the level of Sturm Graz, who Sporting played in the group stage. Second leg as well as home for Sporting is important. Benfica should dispose of Toulouse. Seen them a few times this season, and they are not as bad as their present league position. But Benfica have too much for them. Totally agree with you there. Braga should get a job done at home in the first leg, as Carabag can always be tricky away. But a good draw for all three teams in Europa, and I predict that all will progress. So thank you so much, Bag Full of Tofi. I agree with you. Definitely three of the four got very reasonable draws to try to get to the round of 16. And again, I've talked about this a lot with Portuguese clubs, that Portuguese clubs make a lot of their money in terms of getting European birds through the success in the Europa League. Portuguese clubs don't necessarily make it to the final four of the Champions League, but they do have success. And look, it's been a long time, to be fair. But this is a club competition that, as long as we field our best players, because remember, everyone's goal in Portugal is to finish first to automatically go to the Champions League under this reformatted Champions League format next year. Are the Portuguese clubs in the spring going to field the best 11 or rest them because of the weekend in the Liga? But I agree with you. Three of the four, they've done very well, and I think that that's really the best for it. Next question comes here from Acevedo in Boston. Last week you asked the question, is Sporting Porto a Clásico? And my answer is absolutely not. The Clásico has always been and should continue to be Porto Benfica. They are the two biggest clubs in Portugal, with all due respect. And the truth of the matter is those matches have always been the most watched in Portugal. Acevedo, I think, look, the newspapers call Sporting and Porto Clásicos, but I got to be honest with you, you're not the first person I heard of that has told me that they do not think that Sporting Porto is a Clásico. It's a big match. Certainly in Portugal, it's a big match, but it's certainly not a very, very big match. A lot of people feel like Benfica Porto is bigger. But you know what? Sporting won a championship a few years ago. They're in first place. I would say any match that they play against the other big two is always a big match, but I can see your point of view. One last thing I didn't get a chance to talk about very quickly, and that is, I don't remember if I brought it up in this episode, to be honest with you, and that is the European Super League. I'm not surprised that the European Court ruled against, because the truth of the matter is UEFA was stifling competition, and the fact that UEFA and the clubs, I forgot the name of the association with, have made adjustments so that it doesn't look like they're monopolizing, shows that they knew that they might have been in trouble. But what happened 2 years ago is the presentation of that European Super League was poor. UEFA bought itself time by trying to stop it, knowing that down the road this would be a decision would work against them, and they had 2 years to fix it. And here we are now 2 years later. Supposedly a lot of people like this new Super League, but of course all the clubs have come on and say they won't play in it. My thinking is that even if it's just Barcelona, Real Madrid right now, I don't know about Juventus, what happens if other clubs all of a sudden need more money and find that playing in this Euro League would be better for them? Will it create a domino effect? Because a lot of clubs, when they see a bunch of other clubs saying no, 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 will say no, no, no. But all of a sudden, if six or seven clubs decide that they want to play in this new competition, it makes it easier for everybody else to say. And look, football is supporters' passion, but at the end of the day, for a lot of the clubs, it's also about the money that they need to make to keep up with their expenses, especially if you're a big club. But I'll talk about that more in the future. Anyway, folks, listen, happy holidays. Merry Christmas to those that celebrated. Please relax. I know I'm going to try. And I will talk to you as always. Please take care of yourselves. Please take care of your family. And I'll talk to you next week. Ciao, everybody.